Foundation, informing health reform with policy research, data, and expert commentary on the web at healthreform.org.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Afternoon Magazine. It's another edition of Sky Guys. David Leake of the Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College, the William M. Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College. Dave is the coordinator of the planetarium, joins me. I'm meteorologist Ed Keezer of WILL, Illinois Public Media, and we're in for Celeste Quinn today. She's taking a beautiful day off. She must have looked at the weather forecast and decided, you know, this is the day to take. So we're gladly filling in for her this afternoon. And if you have any questions about anything sky, weather, or astronomy, you can give us a call. Our telephone numbers are 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Or toll-free. You can call us anywhere in the United States at 800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. And Dave, it's good to see you again.
It's good to see you. We need to do a live remote with this show, don't we, with this kind of weather outside?
Yeah, I think so. I think the quad would be a nice place to go at this time of year and be outside, because not only is it sunny and warm, but the humidity levels nice and low.
Extremely low, yeah. Yeah, the Sky Guys could come to your place. We ought to do that.
And, of course, low humidity and a clear sky means good viewing of the sky. And one thing I'll just start out with is I haven't been working mornings for a while, and I'm back on mornings as of this morning for a couple weeks at least. And going out this morning, it was nice to have actually a good bit of twilight around 5 in the morning. And I noticed just to the down and to the left of the crescent moon, a bright object there. And my guess is it's what was in the evening sky a few months ago, and that would be Venus. That's my guess.
You are correct, sir. And Mars is also close by as well. So, in fact, tomorrow morning they'll also make a really nice little triangle in the sky. So set the alarm, check out the sky, and then listen to you on the radio, right?
About what time would it be good to look at that? I could still see Venus clearly with the twilight. Obviously, it would be even more spectacular
just
when it's dark.
Whatever time you were out there, maybe subtract 30 minutes, and that'd probably be a very good time. Jupiter was also out there. It rises just after midnight.
And what direction is Jupiter?
By time the sun comes up, it's probably going to be more southeasterly, relatively. Jupiter's still kind of low in the sky given where it's at out there in front of the stars. So more southeast.
So really everything is kind of on that one side of the sky there.
That's right. Yeah, in the evening sky, for all the people who don't want to give up early in the morning, we really just have Saturn. That's pretty much it as far as the evening sky goes.
Yeah, well, it was quite nice to get up on my first morning for a while and look up there and see something really, really neat to look at with the moon and Venus there. And, of course, a beautiful day. And the other thing, too, is we are forecasting a clear sky tonight. And with the humidity levels low for this time of year, it's not midwinter humidity levels, but for this time of year, it should be good sky viewing compared to a typical late
hazy
spring
day.
Yeah,
the sunset last night was stunning, just a stunning sunset. A far cry from last Friday.
Yeah, we had some problems Friday. A little bit of hail in the area. Actually, a little more than a little bit of hail. I was talking to one of our engineers here, and His siding out in Monticello looks like Swiss cheese.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he said some of the hailstones had to be tennis ball size.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we had a couple bouts of severe weather last week.
How much out here at WILL, what was the rainfall for that day? Because I don't think I've ever seen it rain quite that hard. I heard in places they got 3-plus inches.
Friday night?
Yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't here Friday night, I tell you the truth. I could tell you on Wednesday evening, the first round of rain last week, we had over 3 inches here. But
yeah.
Friday evening, I'm not sure. The Water Survey's rainfall total for the month so far is 4.78 inches. So I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to look at the exact WILL total, and I don't have that in front of me. So I'll just
be honest
about that and say I don't know for sure.
It's
but
pretty
probably around
damp.
five inches total so far this month, and that's already above average. And May typically is our wettest month. Our average rainfall in May for the whole month is about 4.8 inches. So we're above average already.
Maybe we can get some things dried up for the farmers this week.
That certainly would be very helpful. I'm sure some planters are in the fields now. And for those fields that are still too wet, at least we do have a very dry day. We have some wind out there. We have the sun. We have low humidity. So that's going to help out considerably. And unfortunately, it looks like more rain is going to be coming back into the area, perhaps Sunday into Monday and then early next week as well. So the next few days will be critical for farmers to gain access to fields and get some planting in. And, of course, that's a big concern around here right now. All is quiet. So if you have any questions about the weather or questions about astronomy, what you see in the sky when the clouds go away and you can actually see beyond, we invite you to call us with your questions. And the numbers to call, once again, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. 9455, of course, spells out WILL if you want to use the letters on your phone. And people are back to using letters now with texting on cell phones. So 333-WILL, 1-800-222-WILL. And right now the phone lines are quiet. And I know why that is, because a lot of people are just outside right now. And
that's right.
When we do our Friday Talk to the Meteorologist segments at 1240, the phone call frequency really highly correlates to the weather. When we have a sunny, gorgeous day like this, usually the phones are a little quieter than when it's anything else out there. We are starting to get some phone calls now, so in just a moment we'll start to take them. Before I get going with the phone calls, wow, just give the numbers out and I see it starting to light up. Do you have any? I'm told you have a brand new show for this month only at the Planetarium.
Yeah, it's more than this month, but we're going to run it probably through early September. It's just we reduce our schedule a little bit through June and July just to save a little bit of funds. But it's called Bad Astronomy, which is an interesting title, but it's subtitled Myths and Misconceptions. So it's all about some of the junk science that's out there and interesting stuff. It's a very lighthearted show that we got from the Detroit Science Center, and it talks about UFOs, junk science in the movies, astrology is in it, which is always big. All of my students seem to all know their signs,
mm-hmm.
and then the moon hoax. The idea is still out there that some think we really didn't land on the moon, which is we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of that coming up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's right. Wow.
My mom and dad let me stay up late and watch that. So.
I remember that, too. Remember it clearly. Well, anyway, that sounds like an interesting show. I know I'm trying to dispel junk science all the time. And now we have some callers online here. Our first caller this afternoon is from Urbana on line one. Good afternoon and welcome to Sky Guys on the Afternoon Magazine.
Hi, thanks. It's not such an interesting call, not as interesting as some of those things you've just mentioned. But what I wanted to ask you to do, and I called last week when we were having severe weather to mention this, and I'm not sure that it would worked from what I said. Would it be possible when there's severe weather and you make the reports to not only mention the names of the counties, but to give some more orientation points? Because when you start giving warnings and saying, it's in, you know, Logan and Sagamon. I don't think a lot of people know where those places are, so it's not helpful.
Okay, well, I'm going to comment. Okay, the various people do severe weather, and some of that does come down to the timing a little bit. When I was doing the severe weather Wednesday night into Thursday morning, and I can only speak for what I do, really, on the new warnings, I did mention a litany of towns, many towns. In fact, at times the list would be 25 towns, and that's it. I felt like I was working at a bus station with connections to Los Angeles. So I was mentioning towns. Now, sometimes on, say, All Things Considered and other programs where there's little windows to try to get the weather in, or when we have updates on warnings, when you start to get so many, as I was listening to the station as I was driving on out of town on Friday evening, and through the static, I was able to pick up WILL all the way beyond Indianapolis, and there were so many warnings, and sometimes it just gets down to reading the counties. And I agree with you. I think the more landmarks that can be given, the better. And I try to do that. And I know my staff does as well. But sometimes when there's so much going on, it does get down to just the county. So we'll try to do a better job with that. I do think that people really also need to know where they live. It doesn't really help when you're traveling, maybe, but and on the highways, we're sensitive to that. But at least where you live, you should know what county you're in, and maybe.
I agree with you, and I have been here for a few years, and partly because of hearing the counties mentioned when the weather reports come through, I do get more familiar with the ones in the area. But if you're talking about one that's several counties to the west, and because it's coming in this direction, and I don't know the name of that county,
right?
You know, it doesn't help. I have no idea where that is.
So, well,
you know,
it's
a little bit of a joke among people to say, you know, like to say, you know, you have this warning and it hasn't made any sense, and so you're not really warned, and it's like, you know, maybe it's next door, maybe it's at the southern edge of the, you know, of the state, and it doesn't help. You know what I mean? So
I understand, but I do know that basically, well, you're from Urbana, so it's Champaign County. If you hear Piatt County, then you know that's one to the west. And beyond that, we'll do our best. Part of it depends on how many warnings are in effect at the time.
Sure.
And what we do, too, is we often, on the first, when the new warning comes in, that's when we list all the towns. Then
right.
Later, when there's a new warning, we'll do that. But we may say, and there's still also a warning in effect. But a lot of times it just comes down to X, Y, and Z counties or the parts of them. And now the Weather Service also issues the warnings storm-based, covering smaller areas. And, for example, last Friday when I was listening, there was a tornado warning for northeastern Champaign County and neighboring northern Vermilion County with a few towns there. But then another one was in effect for parts of Piatt into southwestern Champaign County. And when you start getting multiple warnings, there's only so much you can say on the radio at one time. So
sure,
that's the difficulty we're going through. I did actually call the station at one point and I didn't get through because we're short-staffed, too, and, it, you know, they got to go on the air. I was going to suggest maybe, you know, mentioning a few more places. But, you know, it's something we're constantly working on, and I appreciate your comments, and I will pass that along to others on the staff.
And thank you for all the really good and essential work.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
And I know when I was younger and they would give a warning and I didn't know the county, I'd look it up on a map, and you do that four or five times, and all of a sudden you know the counties that are around you.
Yeah, well, that's how I learned my geography. Well, I'm a geography buff, but that's how, and that's one thing too. When somebody new comes here, I want them to learn not only their counties, but the county seats, the big towns in every county.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our weather staff is pretty good at that. I know Mike Sola knows every little town. between here and Piper City,
because he's from one of
well,
them.
Well, he's from Piper City, but he knows a lot of the area beyond Piper City. He worked at WCIA for many years as a news reporter, and he knows his way around. And when we actually have the time to get on the radar and talk about what's on the radar when there aren't 1,000 warnings at one time, we do like to zero in on specific towns and talk about where things are going. But sometimes we're doing something else, such as our TV broadcast, and if mm-hmm. somebody else is reading a script, oftentimes they just have time for the county. So mm-hmm. that's just something we do our best, and that's how it goes. Well, anyway, we're going to move along to line 4, and this is a caller from Alney. That would be to the south of Hero Ways, and that, I believe, is in Richland County.
I was going to say, what county is Alney in?
Richland County, and I believe it's also the home of the white squirrels.
There you go.
Do I have that right?
Yes, very much. Thank you. Our squirrel population is not, I think the last count was a little bit down because cats and drivers and squirrels fall off of power lines.
Mm.
So we have to watch our white squirrels.
Yeah, that's a treasure of Alney.
Yes, it is. You kind of hit on this at the very beginning about what's in the sky around 5 o'clock, but give me a time frame. I'm watching the moon, and then I'm seeing this thing up in the treetops, but I don't hang around long enough to wait 30 minutes for it to come above the treetops. So what am I looking for out there tonight?
Well, the brightest thing in the east as the sun comes up is going to be Venus.
Okay.
And the moon will be there, I believe, tomorrow morning. But, of course, with the moon orbiting the Earth, it's not staying in the same place. So tomorrow morning, it'll make a nice little triangle with Venus. And Mars will be much, much fainter and a little to the left of Venus. But, that's the bright thing you'll see towards the east as the twilight's coming up.
And this is like 5 o'clock or?
About then. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Enjoy your program.
Thanks. Thank you very much. And, you know, twilight is quite out there at 5 a.m. now. And
yeah.
It's changed dramatically in the last few weeks. I did one morning shift about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was not nearly as bright out there as it was this morning. This morning it was impressive. I thought, wow, there's light. Am I late for work? What's going on? You know, so... So we did have, the sun, we're getting to that earliest part of the year. The earliest mm-hmm. sunrise is actually in the middle part of June before the summer solstice. So we're getting close to the earliest sunrise of the year. I believe this morning the official sunrise was around 5:32, 5:33, somewhere in there. It's so good bit of twilight as of 5 o'clock in the morning.
Sounds good. It's a little early for me.
Well, it's my favorite time of year to do the morning shift, that's for sure. It's the only time of year that you see any light. And I'll tell you, when you work the really early mornings, you detect the onset of winter or the change toward sooner than anyone else, because by the end of July, it's dark again. And I'm like, oh, here it comes. Anyway, we're on Sky Guys. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Ed Kieser, the chief meteorologist at WILL, and beside me here is Dave Leake. He's the coordinator of the William M. Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College, and periodically we like to do this show we call Sky Guys, where you can call in and ask your questions about the weather or about astronomy, anything in the sky. And the numbers to call are 333-9455. 1-800-222-9455. We have all our lines open and available. If you have any weather-related questions, any astronomy-related questions, or something in between, we'll be glad to take your calls. And it's a fun thing we like to do every so often. Every few months we come in and do the show and give Celeste Quinn a little break from 1 o'clock hour here on the Afternoon Magazine. And with that, I see the phone lines are lighting up again, so we'll go to line 1 in Champaign. Good afternoon. Welcome to Sky Guys.
Hello. I had some curious questions about the galaxies. Perhaps Dr. Leake could help on this. Now, I think, if I'm correct, the Earth spins approximately 1,000 miles per hour. Correct me if this is wrong.
At the equator, please. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the the Earth rotates around the sun at what speed? Can you tell me that?
About 66,000 miles an hour.
Okay. And now, what is the speed that the galaxy spins at?
Well, it kind of depends on where you're at.
Okay, let's take our location.
Yeah, the sun is moving, and I'd have to do a little, get out the calculator to equate this in miles per hour, but it's about 12 miles a second.
Okay.
Which sounds pretty quick, but in the big scheme of things, it's really not that much. But, as you get farther towards the center of the galaxy, it starts to revolve a little bit, or rotate, I should say, a little bit like a hubcap. In other words, it's not solid. I don't want to give that impression. But that, in other words, from the center, and as you go out farther, the speeds increase a little bit.
Okay.
Then you reach a point where the galaxy starts to rotate a little bit like a sink draining, where the farther you way, the way you are from the center, it gets a little slower. So, so we're all cruising along pretty good, and I constantly remind my wife of that when she says I never take her anywhere.
I had one more thing. Now, is a galactic year 250 million years?
I believe that's right. Yeah, I haven't come across that one in a while, but it's
is that correct?
I believe that's right, yeah.
Okay, I'm just trying to get an idea of how things are spinning. But and now, everything, all galaxies are moving toward or away from something, and what kind of speeds are they moving at? Or is that a reasonable question?
Well, they're not really moving away from something, but there's a couple of typical examples that are often given. One is if you like raisin bread, you put bread in the oven, and say if each raisin were a galaxy, as the bread rises, no matter what raisin you're on, the other ones seem to be moving away. So it's not as if they're moving away from something.
Okay.
But and another typical example is the whole inflating a balloon. If you put dots on it, then no matter which one you're on, the others are going to look like they're moving away.
Right.
And as far as the speed goes, that's also not quite as easy as it sounds, because if you go back to that balloon example, with all the dots on the balloon and the balloon inflating, you pick a dot and say, this is where I live. The farther away another dot's is from you, the faster it's going to seem to be going away.
Okay.
Now, that's not so much that the galaxy is actually moving that fast, it's just space itself is expanding.
I have one more mind tickler, if you don't mind me asking.
I'll do my best.
Is there a place, and that's an incorrect term, is there a location that there is no space?
Have you ever seen Ed's apartment?
What?
I'm not trying to make light of it. I really am not. But is there's space in the universe, okay, infinite as far as I know. But is there a place where there is no space? And I know that sounds kind of silly, but has that concept been explored where there is just not space? Not necessarily solid, but just not space?
Well, that's now you're getting into some strange stuff, because I would probably say no, just because space is kind of, you know, what is. And in fact, that's where a lot of people have misconceptions about this whole thing that they've called the Big Bang, that they think that there's sort of like this big room where space is, and then the Big Bang happened somewhere. That's not right. Actually, that when space was made, when the Big Bang went off and space is expanding, so it doesn't really make a lot of sense to talk about what's outside of that.
Yes,
so,
I know it's kind of just a thinking point, but
yeah,
you consider the universe, and I just thought about space, and not that there isn't space, but is there something that where space ends? And I know that sounds kind of silly.
No, it's a good question. It's not silly. It's a good question with not easy answers, and I probably haven't done a very good job in answering it.
You've told me just fine. I appreciate your answer. Thank
Thanks
you for
the
time.
Call.
Well, thank you for your call. And
I apologize to my colleague.
There's some space there. But, the thing I cannot and will never be able to conceptualize is, okay, the universe is expanding in that space. What's on the other side?
And, yeah, you know, there sort of is no other side.
Well, that I can't conceptualize, and so therefore I'm just going to move on, and we're going to go to line two, and our next caller is from another state of Indiana, Terre Haute. Good afternoon. Welcome to Sky Guys on the Afternoon Magazine.
Hello. I'd like to have you explain the the arguments, the reasons, the scientific reasons for the theory of global warming, and then the arguments against that. I understand that there's a very prestigious professor of meteorology at MIT, Dr. Lindzen, who says that the whole global warming thing is based on junk science. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Well, I'm really not the expert to talk about this as far as getting into because what this comes down to really is a political discussion in the end. Actually the question's framed that way, you know, and that's the one thing I hate about the whole topic to begin with is I feel whenever the question is asked by whomever, it's often asked with a certain answer that's desired. And I'm going to tell you, I try to keep an open mind on the subject. First off, global warming, climate change, we ought to talk about some of those terms. And I'm not going to give a definitive answer on what is and what is not happening for sure, because there's some things that we don't know for sure. We do know that the Earth's average global temperature has warmed over the last century and continues to do so. In general, the trend is up. That doesn't mean every year is warmer than the previous year. And there are actually right now we're seeing a few years that are a little cooler than what we saw in the late 90s. And there's some good explanations for that, including Dave could probably comment on the solar minimum that we're going through now. But the Earth has warmed up. So first off, global warming, if you will define it as most people do, as being the average global temperature warming up, there's no question about that happening. The bigger question is why, and will it continue, and how much? There's a bunch of questions there. That goes into the why. So is it all natural? Is it humans? Et cetera, et cetera. And really, a lot of people can find whoever they want to say whatever they want them to say, unfortunately. And I get a little upset when it gets so political and not scientific. There are, you know, the person that he cited, I don't know personally, or really, that's not a person I'm well familiar with. MIT, of course, I'm well familiar with as being an institution of higher learning that's highly respected. And in a lot of departments, you will have varying opinions on topics where things aren't completely proven. Most scientists I know do believe that at least to some extent, some of the average temperature increase over the last several decades has been due to human influence. I'm not going to say that I know for sure, but I do. I've seen a lot that makes me feel that at least some of it is human induced. We've been adding a lot of pollution to the atmosphere for years, and that's the one thing I'll just say on this. Whether you believe humans are the cause of global warming or climate change or not, the one thing that I always come back to is this, and that is the increase in carbon dioxide, which is the, I guess he asked about what is the theory behind, he didn't say humans, but what's the theory behind this happening? Obviously, in the current political climate, the discussion is on carbon dioxide, and there are right now Congress is going through some procedures to, I think it's Congress. I know the EPA at least has put carbon dioxide on the pollutant list, if I guess you could say, for a lack of a better term. And as a result of that, carbon dioxide emissions will be regulated more than in the past. But a lot of the increase in carbon dioxide being released into the atmosphere is due to combustion. And I always get back to this. When you have combustion, you know, carbon dioxide is not a pollutant that that makes us sick or anything like that. But there's other things that are the result of combustion that's not good for us to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not carbon monoxide, for example. And some combustion leads to excess ozone in the lower part of the atmosphere, which creates smog in the summertime. And I think, you know, as a society, I just feel that we should always be looking for better ways of producing energy. We can always do better. And over centuries, we have done better. So global warming due to humans aside, combustion is a necessary thing to have the lifestyle we have. And I'm not suggesting that we should change our way of living overnight and we should just stop driving cars. I would never suggest anything like that. But on the other hand, I think we should always be looking for alternative ways of creating energy, cleaner ways of creating energy, because that'll improve the air we breathe. And it also will, and if it takes out some of the other climate impacts, you know, that would be good. And also, politically, the one thing I'll say is I don't like depending on countries that don't like us. I really don't like that. You know, I prefer to find a way where we don't have to deal with that. But
so you're saying even if the extent of the problem is controversial, the solution is a good idea.
Yeah.
Whether we can agree on the extent of the problem or not.
Yeah. Now, of course, the solutions, that's where you get in the political debate, and I don't want to get into that. Obviously, if some drastic solutions are proposed and become law, that has other impacts that could go into affect other things. So I think what we should do as a society is always try to strive to do better. I'm not mm-hmm. saying, you know, as far as how fast you do that or what you do or how much is mandated and all of that, that's where you get into the political discussions, which
right.
I want to stay out of. But what I'm saying is I think a lot of times people are just trying to say, oh, is this hooey or is this the end of the world? And I seem to hear more from, oh, if we don't stop putting out carbon dioxide tomorrow, the world's going to end because, or it's all fake and we should ignore it, you know, and
the extremes.
The extremes, yeah. And I, you know, I think that there's ways to work together to solve multiple problems at once. I guess that's what I'm trying to say with my long, rambling answer there. So anyway.
But a good one.
I don't know about that. But it's a topic that I'm not the expert on. But as I find, you know, there are people I respect on both sides of that debate. I guess that's the last thing I'll say. I have friends, obviously, that study climate. I have friends that are meteorologists that I really respect, and some are close to the extremes on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it very tough. And, you know, I'm here just doing my little weather show every day, looking at the weather. It's hard enough for me to forecast 5, 6, 7 days out, let alone a century.
Yeah, really.
So I leave that to other people.
That'll be on Talk to Ed next.
And this one's
100 years from now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll know a little more in about 20 years. Last thing I will say on this, the climate is changing. And again, the debate will be how much is natural or unnatural. But the one thing that looks very unnatural to me is I have been to the Arctic, and the climate is rapidly changing there. I've seen it with my own eyes. You know, I believe that the warming that's been taking place in the Arctic regions is real and extreme compared to the past. And
it's rough on the polar bears.
It is very rough on the polar bears, and there's a lot of other changes there too. And there's some questions of how things will change if the permafrost keeps melting up there too. So a few cold years here, I think, would help out quite a bit here. And last on that, now I keep rambling. the one thing that really gets under my skin is when you talk about the extreme points. Either way, if we go through a hot period in the summer, oh, that's global warming. Or when you get a cold period in the winter, oh, ha ha ha, global warming, huh? You know, you get that all the time. And you can't take one single weather event and attribute it to global warming or not global warming. It's a longer term situation, and I could tell you if the average temperature of the Earth goes up 5 degrees, we'll obviously have a warmer average temperature, but we're still going to have cold weather at times. And vice versa, if it goes down a few degrees, we're still going to have warm periods, just maybe not as many. So there's still going to be variations in the weather. There's still going to be places with above and below average temperature. And I think people seem to think that global warming means everything warms up at once. It's not an even thing. Or if we go the other way and we cool down a little. Anyway, that's enough on that right now until somebody else calls and add some more. And we're going to go to McLean County, the largest county in Illinois, since we've been talking geography today.
I didn't know that. That's the largest one, huh?
Largest in terms of size, aerial coverage. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Your conversation is great. I want to change it totally to really simple stuff.
Okay.
basic education. My question is, I have heard you say something. I'm going to switch phones because my battery's dying, okay?
Okay.
Sorry. Thank you. Something about when summer begins and when spring begins and versus equinox and summer solstice and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different way people, you know, like the science, people in science will categorize it differently. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Now, this is where Ed and I get into an arm wrestling match.
Ooh.
As far as meteor,
you win. You're bigger. You're stronger.
Meteorological, astronomical summer and meteorological summer, and is that kind of what you're referring to?
Yes.
Well, actually, in the Water Survey, one of our listeners, sometimes Bob Scott, will make a point. It's not meteorological summer. It's climatological.
Which makes sense. Apologize,
because
Mr. Scott.
We're looking at the longer, you know, climatology is the accumulation of weather events over a long period of time, and includes extremes and averages. And climatological summer here, well, throughout the U.S., is defined as June, July, and August. You said you had a simple question, and we simplify things with climatological seasons. The three warmest months of the year are June, July, and August, so that's climatological summer.
But that's when summer starts, is in June, not March 21st.
No, well, summer's okay. Astronomical, well, both of them start in June. It's climatological summer starts June 1st.
Okay.
Astronomical summer starts with the summer solstice, which averages on June 21st.
Okay, so astrological is the 21st of June and the 21st of December as being summer winter.
Astronomical
Yeah.
I just say that. I'm doing that to keep Dave happy here. So in terms of what you see on a calendar, the official seasons, spring begins with the vernal equinox in March.
Right.
Summer begins with the summer solstice in June.
Mm-hmm.
Fall or autumn begins with the autumnal equinox in September, and winter starts with the winter solstice in December. Now, the interesting thing is the summer solstice is the day when the sun is highest in the sky here in the Northern Hemisphere, and that's our longest day of the year. So to me, it doesn't really make sense that summer should start on that day, because that's the highest day. So right now we're a month before the summer solstice, and our day length is equal to that of around July 21st or July 20th. And actually all throughout August, the sun is lower in the sky and our days are shorter. So in the weather community, we define the seasons climatologically, and we just say June, July, and August make up summer because those are the three warmest months. September, October, November make up fall. December, January, February is winter. And then we have March, April, May is spring. And so that's how we do it in the climatological, meteorological realm. And I guess if I were to take a step further, meteorological summer would start a little different every year because it's short-term weather, depending on when the really warm weather kicks in for good.
Now, the astronomers can tell you
that
when that sun reaches the highest point where it's right above the Tropic of Cancer, mm-hmm. that's going to happen on June 21st for Central Daylight Time at 12:46 a.m. So we can actually get right down to the minute of when the sun reaches that point.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can also throw in, I actually agree with Ed, believe it or not.
Wow. We agree?
That when you say the sun, we call that the first day of summer, and that's when the sun's at its highest point. Well, after the first day of summer, the sun's going to be gradually getting lower in the sky at noon. That's what we perceive anyway. So there were actually some people that decided that they would take, say, the point halfway between the spring equinox and the summer solstice, and they don't start a season there, but they actually have some days in there. In fact, they don't really celebrate this a lot, but I know when I was younger, you remember the old May Day with maypoles and things? Yeah, that's called a cross-quarter day. That's roughly halfway between the first day of spring and the first day of summer. And like between the first day of winter and first day of spring, that happens to be Groundhog Day, which we call it, you know, we have old Phil out there in Pennsylvania, isn't it?
Punxsutawney.
Yeah, and I knew I'd mispronounce that, but that's there is a reason why that's February 2nd. And it's not just because it's my mother-in-law's birthday, but it's because it's a cross-quarter day. Now, you can tell me if the caller's still there.
Yes,
halfway between the autumn equinox, like September 23rd, and the winter solstice in December, what day do you think that is?
Oh, no, don't give me a quiz, please.
And I give you a hint. You dress up and you go door-to-door looking for candy. That's why Halloween is the day that it is. It's a cross-quarter day.
So what's around August 1st?
Well, that's a good one, because that's the one that never made it over here from Europe. It's called Lammas, which means loaf mass, and it's a religious ceremony made with the first grains of the harvest as they come in. And that never made it big over here. So it never translated from Europe.
Just like August is the only month without a holiday.
Yeah.
Something...
Oh, we should start
funny about
one.
That. It's yeah, got, there you go.
It's got the biggest meteor shower, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what we look forward to August.
We could just start a new holiday right here on Sky Guys. How's that?
Do we get a day off?
Sure. Since we invented it, we get the day off.
No, all of us get a day off.
All right. Well, you're in on it.
Well, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling. Well, we only have about 5 more minutes of Sky Guys, so we'll move right along here. I'll just give the phone numbers out one more time in case somebody wants to get in on the tail end of the show today, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. And we're now going to move along to line one, and now we have a caller from Tazewell County, not far from McLean County, a little bit to the west-southwest of McLean County, and in the Peoria metropolitan area. Good afternoon.
Hello there. I love learning this kind of thing, and I have nothing nearly as interesting to say as the previous discussion. But as far as global warming goes, if we were to call it climate change instead of warming, might we not avoid some of the difficulties in the discussion?
I think I heard a lot of scientists call it that.
Yeah, I like to call it climate change too, because global warming, I think the one misnomer that comes from that term is that everybody thinks that every place is going to warm up equally, and that's not the case. In fact, over the last few decades, the Arctic has warmed up a lot more than the continental U.S. In fact, there are some places that are actually a little cooler. It's the global average temperature. So climate change, I think, better reflects the whole issue. And to some extent, there's always climate change taking place. There always has been and there always will be. So the big debate just becomes on what is it humans are causing, if any, compared to other natural occurrences. And that's what it comes right down to. And then that's the debate on how much should humans do to try to change it from happening versus nothing. But anyway,
I'm still waiting on the Cubs to heat up.
Well, your team's doing better than my team. My team, Cleveland, I was listening to the game on the radio last night. Things went well until that former Cubs closer came in and blew the game big time.
They've been there, done that.
They gave up a 3-run lead with one inning. Anyway, this is not a sports show, but we'll move along to line two. And Rantoul, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi,
hello.
You're on the air.
This is really simplistic.
Good.
You
I
don't
love
predict
that.
Meteors. You no. predict the weather. Why are you not a weatherologist?
That's a good question.
That is a good
I
question.
Like that question.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and when I teach out at Parkland College, my one class a semester, I bring up that quite a bit or early on, and I tell my students, and now you know this, when you go to a party this weekend, you can impress people, and they look at me like I'm nuts, because what they don't know is I know that I'm joking with them when I say that, but. Really what it comes down to is meteorology is the study of hydrometeors, hydro meaning water and meteors or anything that falls from the sky. Nowadays, we just talk about meteors being the space stuff that
right.
Dave can
right.
better describe.
Hard stuff that comes down and hurts things and people.
Yeah, but a few centuries ago, anything that came from the sky was considered a meteor, and in particular, snowflakes, raindrops, hail, anything like that. All of those particles falling from the clouds made of water are called hydrometeors, and that's where meteorology gets its name.
That's a great question.
Yeah, well thank you. I wasn't sure you'd appreciate such a simplistic question. But
no, and I'm sure a lot of people out there did not know that.
I did not know that.
And see,
you do.
You were the one to ask.
I know.
You've helped a lot of people.
That's nice to know.
Have a good day.
Thank you. I appreciate everything you do.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we're getting short on time here, but I think we can take one more call. And, Dave, I can just tell you, we've got somebody calling back from Alney in line 4. And I think, Dave, this is a question or a comment regarding Hubble. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm looking at my clipping. A piano-sized camera was installed on Hubble. This article is on the 15th. And at the very end of the article, it says that they will be able to look into deeper in the universe to within 500 million to 600 million years of creation. What will be there?
What will be there? I don't know. That's why I hope they're looking. The way that works, they word things that way, and that's always a strange way of wording it. It's not inaccurate. But any time you look into space, in fact, if you go outside tonight and look out at the stars, you're actually looking back into time, because it takes time for that starlight to get all the way across space and then to get down into your eyeballs. So the more distant things you look at, you're seeing how they used to be. And so that's sort of what they mean by looking back into time. And with the Hubble's new camera, not only will the Hubble collect a lot of light with its big mirror, but just more sensitive detectors there. That's kind of what they're getting at. It should be exciting, and I don't know what they'll find there. Maybe my lost car keys. I don't know what'll be there.
Okay. Well, guess what, Dave? We're out of time.
Aww.
That's latest edition of Sky Guys. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, it's my pleasure. It's been a good time.
And I'd like to thank Henry Frayne, our technical director this afternoon. He's been with us the last few times. And, of course, our producer, Harriet Williamson. But now it's ag time.
All right.
It is ag time.
It is. And, Todd, thanks for putting your voice in there. I was going to throw it to you, but that verifies
here.
You're the one.
I've got one more question related to the last one. So when I look at the closest stars, how far back in time am I looking?
Well, besides the sun, actually, even sunlight takes 8 minutes to get here.
Right.
But the closest star beyond that, it's you're seeing how the star was 4 years ago.
That's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's look at futures instead. Thanks, Ed Kieser, too, for hosting the program. And Sky Guys, let's take a look at what's happening in the future now as opposed to in the past. And we'll do that in Chicago, where they're trying to guesstimate what the cost or the price of a bushel of soybeans or corn or wheat might be in Chicago today. They expect July wheat futures will be $6.04¾ on the high price for its day trade, a low at $5.85¾ for the settlement price in July wheat at $5.97¾, up 9 cents. September 6:30½, the high, the low at $6.12. Settlement price at 623¾, up 9¼. In December wheat, 653½. The high, the low at 35. Settlement price at 646¼, up 9¢. In the March contract for the wheat pit at 668½. The high, the low at 656¾. Settlement price at $6.62, up 9¼. And we do really mean futures prices there. What they're suspecting or expecting to happen, if you were to deliver wheat in March, it would be $6.62 a bushel, but of course that changes on a minute-by-minute basis in Chicago when the trade is open. From the corn pit, July futures today at 434¾, the high, low at 423, settlement price at 426, up a quarter. September, 444, the high, the low at 32¾, settlement price at 435½, up a quarter of a cent. In December futures, 456, the high, the low at 444¼, settled at $4.47¼, up a quarter. And the March futures, 465½, the high, the low at 54¾, settlement price at $4.57¼, a half cent higher. And May corn for 2010, 471¼, the high, the low at 61¾, settlement price at $4.64¼, up 0.75¢. July oat futures at 238½, up 4½ on the day. July soybean futures today, $11.89½, the high, the low at 11.60. Settlement price at $11.69, up 7. The August, $11.47¼, the high, the low at $11.18¾. Settlement price at $11.29½, up 9½. In September, $10.75¾, the high, the low at $10.50. Settled at $10.63½, up 12½¢. In November beans, $10.22½, the high, the low there at $9.93. Settled at $10.14½, up 18½¢. January soybean futures, $10.23¾, the high, the low at $9.99½. Settlement price at $10.17, up 19½. Bean meal futures now, July contract, $3.82, the high, low at $372. Settlement price at $374.80, up 80¢. The August, $3.64, the high, the low at $355.80. Settlement price at $358, up $2.30. And July soybean oil, $38.96, the high, the low at $38.17, settled $38.37, up 20¢. The August contract, $39.09, the high, the low at $38.40, settled $38.52, up 19¢. For the CME Group grains and oil seed sides, now let's take the look at the livestock there. June live cattle today at 82.25 top, bottom at 81.40. Settlement price at 82.22½, up 55¢. August 82.90, the high, the low at $82.02. Settlement price at 82.87½. The August live cattle 25¢ higher. October futures were down 12½¢. 88.90, the high, the low at $88.27½. Settlement price at $88.50. 400 pounds, 12½¢ lower. And December contract, $91.05, the high, the low at $90.40. Settlement price at $90.70, down a nickel for the day. May feeder cattle, $99 and a nickel, the high, the low at $98.90. Settlement price at $98.90, up a nickel. August feeders, $101.90, the high, the low at $100.60. Settlement at $101.70, up 32½¢. And September futures, $102.30, the high, low at $101.20. Settlement price at $102.17½, up 32½. October feeders, $102.35, the high, the low at $101.40. Settled $102.30, up 35¢. June lean hog futures, $66.80, the high, the low at $65.75. Settled at $66.47½, up 22½. July, $68.50, the high, the low at $67.50. Settled $68.45, up 35¢. And the August contract unchanged today, $69.10, the high, the low at $68.35. Settlement price at $68.95, unchanged. October lean hog futures, $64.20, the high, low at $63.35, a settlement price at $63.95, 67½¢ higher. Frozen pork bellies were unchanged in the nearby contract, and the July futures at $70.47½ were down $1.72½ on the afternoon. They settled at $70.47½. At 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time this afternoon, during the closing market report, we'll talk with Paul Cooley. He's with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And then a bit later in that program, the folks at the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana, will join us to take up the cash grain market. And the ever-important agricultural weather forecast will come to you today with Drew Lerner out of World Weather Incorporated. We'll be looking with him at the late weekend, Monday through Wednesday forecast of next week, which really has been saying there might be some rainfall across portions of the Midwest. Drew's not quite convinced that will be the case, so we'll talk to him more during the closing mark report at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time today. You are listening to Illinois Public Media. This is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3, Urbanum.